on these radio shows and in these magazines. So when Destination Weddings and Honeymoons magazine created this A-list award, they saw me and were like, okay, well, she's got to be one of the top, you know, we see her everywhere. And so I was the only one in Latin America that they put on this list. And because of that, that blew the doors off, because then people were like, oh, okay, she is, she's legit. We got to go to her.
Welcome to the Three Steps to Thrive podcast, where each show will show you three simple, practical, and actionable steps to improve your life or your business. Now, here's your host, James Lamb. And guess what? That's me. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are. My name is James from the podcast Three Steps to Thrive. I'm thrilled to have the PR specialist Larissa Banting on today. Larissa, say hello.
Hello.
So Larissa, that was a beautiful voice. I've always noticed you've had a beautiful voice, but that was a lovely hello. So team, it's my pleasure. Larissa has a really, really neat story, and I think it's going to be something that you're going to want to hear, and obviously Larissa is going to talk about her three steps to improve the business or the business owner at the end. But let me tell you a little bit more about Larissa before we start. So Larissa has a successful career as a professional dancer, and she used that creativity, and now she focuses on marketing and public relations, particularly public relations. One of only a handful of professionals to be accredited by the Canadian Public Relations Society, her past clients include the City of St. Albert, Bombay Sapphire Gin, the Northern Alberta International Children's Festival, Nelvana, CBC, which is the Canadian Broadcasting Company, for those of you who are listening internationally, and CTV Networks. And she now does all of this, all of what she does from Costa Rica with her husband. And when she first moved down there, she was one of the first destination wedding planning firms in Central America. And within 4 years, had been named top 30 destination wedding planners in the world. Banting is the author of the best-selling Costa Rica, The Brat Guide. So welcome to the show, Larissa. I think the first question on everybody's mind, well, there's lots of questions that came from there, but what is life like in Costa Rica? You've probably visited stellar places like St. Albert, apparently, right? Could you work? You
did PR for I worked in St. Albert for many years.
I think you're, well, this is interesting because you know, it's one of the things that we spoke about, but you grew up in Stoney Creek. I grew up in Burlington. I actually spent 4 years in Edmonton. So St. Albert, you're just outside my vicinity, right? So
I lived in Edmonton.
There you go.
13 years.
So what you're saying is at some point in time, I will go down to Costa Rica to live, which sounds amazing. But can you tell our listeners a little bit more about what it's like to live down there?
Sure. And actually, just to blow your mind even more, James, the first 3 years of my life, I lived in Burlington.
Oh my gosh, there you go.
Yeah.
And that's where I'm from, team, if you didn't know. So Livingston and I are like kin. So there you go. So
kind of kindred spirits. Costa Rica is, it is a really magical little place. My first move came down here was like 2001. To work on a movie shoot. I had no idea. You know, I thought it was going to be like Mexico. It is not Mexico. It is, hold on. My dog is eating gum, glue. It is, pardon me, the most biodiverse country in the world, for one thing. So, it apparently has like over 3.something% of the entire biodiversity of all of the world. So it is so full of birds. I mean, I'm up on a mountain. I'm just west of San Jose, which is the capital, which is a valley. We have, it's called the city of eternal spring. I don't have any heating in my house. I don't have any air conditioning. We open the windows in the daytime, and at night we're like, you know, under a comforter. Mm-hmm. So it's like perfect weather. But then, you know, we have 13 microclimates. So if I go across the valley and up in to the mountains up towards one of the volcanoes, because we have like 113 volcanoes. It's nippy, like it's cold. Like it gets down. I mean, cold for us is like, oh, it's like 10 degrees Celsius or 12 degrees Celsius. But then I go an hour the other direction to the coast and I'm at the beach, mm-hmm. and it's, you know, like maybe 36 degrees Celsius. Mm-hmm. I don't know what that is in American talk. Yeah.
it's hot. It's hot. Let's put 90? It that way.
Yeah. But you know what? I have to say we never get the heat. Like I went to Toronto to go visit my family 2 years ago in August, and we couldn't go outside for a barbecue because it was too darn hot.
Yes.
We never have that here. Like it always, never gets too, because we're so close to the equator. It's never too hot. Mm-hmm. Even at the beach. And as soon as the sun goes down, it cools down by, so it's nice and it's like perfect. And we have right now it's rainy season or winter. Mm-hmm. So, but the sun is shining, it's a blue sky, and probably later this afternoon, it'll, get rainy for a couple of hours and then it'll stop.
So do you breathe in nature there? I mean, that's a big thing in Costa Rica, right? Being surrounded by green and many levels of vegetation and birds and animals. And when you open the window, you make reference to the temperature, but I'm sure you hear things. Right.
Oh yeah.
And you feel the breeze coming. That must be such an interesting way to just live and get up and you're surrounded by nature.
Well, that is a thing. It's true because we have so many, especially where I live, because we have like coffee farms up the road. We were actually part of a protected area and it had been cow pastures when we bought this land and then we built our house and we just closed everything in. The field next door. So now we just let nature take over. And it is like, seriously, it's like a forest. Mm. And we did nothing. Like over the past 15 years we've lived here, we've just let things go wild. We now have toucans sometimes in our backyard. We have so many birds. Like I'll be on a call and people are like, are those birds I hear in the back? I'm like, oh yeah, like a flock of parakeets will fly overhead. And that at night, we have owls. Like I fall asleep to the sound of owls. Sometimes I even hear coyotes because they're up in the coffee farms up the road. It's just a really magical place. Like even like going to like the touristy beach areas, like mm-hmm. there's sloths mm-hmm. and monkeys everywhere and beautiful, scarlet macaws. It's just everything. It's so green and rich and there's life everywhere and people are so super mellow. So yeah, it's really, it's a beautiful place and you can drink the water.
Oh, there you go.
One of two countries in Latin America, you can drink the water here in Chile.
Amazing. It's a privilege though. And you learn that pretty quickly, don't you?
Yes. I mean, we don't have an army. It was outlawed in 1949 and all of that money that would have gone to defense spending has instead gone to universal healthcare. Education, we have 96% literacy rate and social programs.
Amazing. Amazing. Yeah. Tell me a little bit, and this is my last question about Costa Rica, but I think all of us are a little bit interested. Now you are a super social person, right? You are in PR and you get along well with people. Do you ever get lonely there? Is that because you have your husband, right? And you didn't know very many people. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
It's a different, I think it's for anybody who becomes an expat, quote unquote, because while the expat community, like it's one of those things, if you hear someone speaking English and you kind of just like glom onto them and, you speak English. Okay. You're one of my people. I speak Spanish and of course this is a very family oriented culture. So it's a little bit trickier to kind of break in, so mm-hmm. to speak. But regardless, the thing I would say is the most difficult is you make friends with someone and they leave. In fact, I'm saying that because someone we've made really good friends with, they're leaving tomorrow morning to go back to the US.
Aww.
So so that's I'd say is the hardest part mm-hmm. is you meet someone, you start having all these great relationships with them and then they move on.
Yes.
Because sometimes they're working for like NGOs mm-hmm. or multinationals. So they're only here or they're with the embassies, they're only here for a couple of years. So that honestly would be the hardest part about it.
Yeah, I can absolutely see that. But when you went there, you started a destination wedding company. And I'm going to read this part out because this is what's in your bio, right? But within 4 years, you have been named top 30 destination wedding planners in the world. Tell me a little bit about why you decided to do that.
Necessity, to be honest. Yes. I had to pivot. Like this whole thing, you know, now everyone's talking about, oh, pivot. I pivoted like 17 years ago, because what happened was I was a film publicist. We were working on a movie of the week for the CTV network, which is like one of the biggest networks, the private network in Canada. And we were shooting here in November, December of 2001. I met my husband, Roberto, who was one of the actors on the film. So I had to go back to Canada, finished, we wrapped production like on December 20th. I was on a plane January 8th down here. Everyone thought I had lost my mind. It was like, you don't speak Spanish. I'm like, yeah, I know. You don't have a job. Figure it out. And I couldn't do my job as a publicist because back then we only had dial-up internet. There was no social media. There was no Facebook. So, and I didn't, you know, so I came here. I don't speak the language at that time. And I didn't know the landscape of media. So it was like, well, I got to do something. So I started teaching English for a whopping $4 an hour.
Yes.
That wasn't going to pay my visa bill. So I got in with a travel agency as a salesperson and did really well at that because I've always been good at sales. And there just happened to be an opportunity that they needed a wedding planner. It was like, well, I just got married here myself with my husband and went through all of this. And I don't know how people could do this without a wedding planner if they're from afar. Put together a business plan and I started, and then it just kind of took off. And from there I ended up, I remember hiring my first assistant. And that was scary because all of a sudden it was like, I am responsible for someone else's livelihood.
Yes.
And that was scary. So, and then it just took off from there. And, you know, there was a lot of, at that time, I mean, think back 2003, there was still a lot of misconceptions about Central America because what a lot of people had heard that, you know, they were the war, the Contra, and then in Nicaragua, you know, what was going on in Panama, and Costa Rica was just like this little bastion of peace, but everyone just thinks, oh, guerrillas, you know, civil war. Oh, we don't want to go to Costa Rica. That's too scary. So I had to do a real PR campaign. And so that's what I did. I started contacting all of these wedding magazines. I was submitting my real weddings. We had the first real wedding south of Mexico to be published in a major modern bride magazine. And then that snowballed, because that's what media does. It eats itself and then it snowballs because everyone's on a deadline and they always are looking for a great story. So if they see something in one magazine, it's like, oh, that's a great idea. Oh, Costa Rica, we should feature them because no one talks about Costa Rica. And then it just kind of snowballed. And I did a press tour. I went to New York City. I was interviewed on Martha Stewart Living Radio, which is wild. I did not meet Martha, though, unfortunately.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Wasn't she in jail at the time?
I think she might have been.
Oh, my gosh.
She was.
That's probably why you didn't meet her. Otherwise, I'm sure she would hear that Larissa Banting was in town and be like, I need to clear my schedule.
Martha? Okay. But it was great. So, and then because of that, it was, you know, because I was in the media and like on, you know, on these radio shows and in these magazines. So when Destination Weddings and Honeymoons magazine created this A-list award, they saw me and were like, okay, well, she's got to be on the top, you know, we see her everywhere. And so I was the only one in Latin America that they put on this list. And because of that, that blew the doors off, because then people were like, oh, okay, she's legit. We got to go to her. And we hit 7 figures in my fourth year of business. And I had 14 employees.
So good, though, hey? Congratulations. That's always good to hear. And it sounds like you've been successful in pretty much whatever you've done, including learning Spanish. So congratulations on that as well. Let me ask you this question.
Capricorn here.
you had a relatively big job, right? You had to not only persuade people to come to you for weddings, but you had to persuade them that Costa Rica was safe. So it was like a double persuasion. And typically in marketing, that's really tough. It's really tough to get people to agree to one thing, let alone two things. Now you also said, so congratulations on that. You also said something that was really interesting. You said that the media is always looking for a good story. Right? Media is like kind of like journalism is kind of like academic writing in a hurry, for lack of a better term. You put together your facts and you do it before a release. So why are people, why is it so difficult for people to get into media? Like, is this a perception that we have, or is it because we don't consider ourselves more interesting enough? Like, why are we saying, oh, we're not really newsworthy? That's not really newsworthy. Why is there so much hang up with business towards media?
I think that's a really good question, James. I think there's a few reasons why, and this is where I always start with my clients, is mindset. Because people feel like, oh, who am I to put myself out there as an expert? Back that up. Because if you have a business, guess what? You have an expertise. Hmm. People are paying you for that experience and knowledge, which makes you an expert. So get over yourself. You're an expert. Own it, right? Even the Kardashians had to start somewhere.
Yes.
And that's the thing about media, is that if you, like, they are not experts on things. Like, they don't mm-hmm. know about your niche. So if you come out and you say, hey, like, I have this expertise, I have, they're like, okay, great, because we need someone to talk about this, and mm-hmm. you fit the bill. So yeah, you own it, get out there. And the thing is, I think a lot of it stems from this kind of, oh, don't be a braggart. Don't show mm-hmm. off. Like, how many of us as kids were told that?
Yes.
And that sticks. And so now when you're being told, you need to let everybody know and get out there with publicity, that triggers.
Yes.
Oh, I can't do that because then I'm going to be showing off, and no one will like me because no one likes a show off.
Yes. Well, it's interesting, right? Because and you're right. There's a lot of that going on. There's also a lot of kind of that imposter syndrome going on, right? You touched on it a little bit, but kind of like I'm just trying to think, like you know, I know in the marketing world, the small business world, you know, it's kind of like, you know, Tony Robbins is a big deal, right? Russell Brunson's a big deal. Like, Amy Porterfield's a big deal. And you have these people, and then we're kind of putting our shingle out but I think internally there's kind of like, I need to know all of what they know. And I need to, you know, I need to basically be them, which is why we end up focusing so much on these items. So it's interesting that you say kind of own your skill and show it off, right?
Yeah. Own your space. Own that space, because guess what? Russell Brunson, I guarantee, does not do what you do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No? And at the same time, we're so focused on, and this is not a personal hang up, but it's, you know, think about books like The 7 Habits of Highly Successful People. Think about us focusing on certain models that, like, what's his name? Warren Buffett, who still lives in the same childhood house, right? And we're like, they're wealthy because they live in the same childhood house. But, you know, I bet, you know, Mark Zuckerberg doesn't, Elon Musk certainly doesn't live in the same.
No.
So we can't emulate trying to be somebody else, right? And that is one of the hardest things, is because we keep reading the zones of genius of other people, yet we never really tap into ourselves for intuition, right?
Well, I think if people are also looking for a shortcut.
Yeah.
You know, we all want that shortcut. Like, oh, they have a secret system that I need to know so I can get from point A to point B super fast.
Well, let me ask you this question. In your experience, because you've trained you've probably worked with hundreds of people now. I think it's hundreds if not thousands of people for sure, right? Is it because they're looking for a shortcut, or is it because they're insecure and they don't believe in themselves? Or is it a little bit of both?
A little bit of both.
Yeah.
It's definitely a little bit of both. I mean, I think once people get over that initial imposter syndrome and they start to feel like, okay, I can do this. Like, there is no one that's going to come jumping out at me from the mm-hmm. bushes to like point their fingers and be like, yeah, who are you? What do you think you're doing? Like some troll under a bridge. Like, sorry, the PR troll.
I'm just getting the visual of someone poking there. And I know you can't see this, but Larissa made a face when she pointed at me and she said, yeah. So. No, that is very fair. Let me, I mean, you've done this several times, right? You went from becoming a professional dancer, and I know there's several steps in the way, but you were talking about being involved in television and radio and film production. And then you went and opened your destination planning. Like, it's, and all these things, you could potentially have imposter syndrome, right? You could potentially have this wealth of insecurity. Travel agency, you talked about that. Did you ever feel that, and how did you get over that?
Uh, You know, I think it's because of my father. My father was a really interesting character because like his famous line was like, well, no one told me I couldn't do it. So he would just go and do it. Like he was a conductor on the radio with an orchestra. He couldn't read a lick of music and he couldn't play an instrument.
Amazing.
But it didn't matter because he was very charismatic. I mean, he ended up being like the reeve of the township. Like he ran in federal politics. He was a pilot in World War II. So I think I saw my dad and, I mean, here's a funny story. When I moved to Edmonton, just to show how you are so in control of your own mind of what you can and cannot do. I moved to Edmonton. And if everyone's ever, well, you know what Edmonton's like in January. And I remember standing at the bus stop in tears that were like actually icicles hanging off my face because I was convinced hypothermia had set in because I could not feel my digits in my feet or my fingers. And I'm like, I can't do this anymore. I need a car. And, you know, I had been dancing professionally in Montreal. Dancers do not make money. So I was like, I don't have money for a car. How do I get a car? I know I will sell cars because they give you a car to drive as a, you know, like to demo. I'm like, brilliant, Larissa. Good job. Let's go do that. So I looked in the newspaper, in the Edmonton Journal. I found some Suzuki was looking for salespeople. So I went in. They gave me like this psychological test to fill out. Well, I'd minored in psych. So I was like, okay, I know what to put down here. So I got the job because I was one of only two female salespeople in all of Alberta. So it was like 1991, 1992. Mm-hmm. And I knew nothing about cars. I knew like you stick the key in the ignition and hope it goes. And I sold a car my first day on pure luck. So then I was like, okay, well, I need to really get in depth with this because I need to know what the heck I'm selling. So I would make a point of going and hanging out in the garage with mechanics and tell me what this is. How does that work? And then I had a great opportunity 3 months down the road because I'd won like top salesperson, whatever.
Amazing.
So Nissan came and said, hey, would you come work for us? And what Nissan did was, this was genius. And this is something I think every marketer should think about. They would get all the salespeople together once a month and have a lunch. And it was like, okay, today we're going to talk about the Pathfinder, Nissan Pathfinder. So in the morning, it was all the specs and here's where we're great. Here's where, you know, you have to look out for. And here's our competitors' vehicles. So we're going to talk about Toyota. We're going to talk about Mazda. We're going to talk about Jeep. So we'd get all of the specs in that. And then after lunch, we would go and test drive them, each of the vehicles, back to back. And then we'd go back to our showrooms and be like, okay, Mr. Smith, I know that you're looking at the Pathfinder. I know you're not just because you're a smart consumer. You're shopping around. So when you go to the Jeep dealer, ask them about this, this, and this. Mm-hmm. When you go to Toyota, be sure to ask yourself, the salesperson, about this. You know what people said? You know more about the competitors' vehicles than their own salespeople do.
Mm-hmm.
So that built confidence, consumer confidence. It was like, okay, they know what, you know, I knew what I was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And in my best month, I sold 24 vehicles.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was just, you know, because I knew my stuff inside out.
Yes. Yes.
And that's, I think, to build consumer confidence is you need to know your stuff, mm-hmm. not just your own stuff, but also know your competitors, because that is how I'm a big proponent about building a blue ocean.
Yes.
And I'm assuming everyone knows the book, The Blue Ocean Strategy, where, you know, you want to create something where you have no competition. You're just out on the ocean. You have all the fish. All the competition is fighting over that little bit of fish, mm-hmm. and it's a bloody red ocean. So find that thing like Cirque du Soleil or whatever, where no one can touch you. You plant your flag on that mm-hmm. hill and you have that magic sauce. So it doesn't matter that you're not Russell Brunson, because again, Russell Brunson's not you. Amy Porterfield's not you. Mm-hmm. Tony Robbins isn't you. You are you. And what is the special you-ness that you bring that makes you help make everyone's lives better?
Yeah, it's interesting, right? Because we, and this is probably something I imagine that, thank you for the story, by the way. That was pretty cool. Now we can add a car salesperson to your bio. One of the top salespeople, by the way. But, you know, where am I going with this? I imagine that when you start working with people, right? Because you work with some startup people too, right? And that's the reason why you start with mindset. But you're a little bit of psychologist there too, aren't you? But a lot of time you say, who do you work with? And I think a lot of people would say, I work with anybody who needs this. And you're kind of like, no. Who do you really work with? No, seriously, I work with anybody that needs it. And you kind of have to dial in exactly who their ideal client is. Because a lot of people, especially in the beginning, it's one of the fallacies that we always make is, it's kind of that scarcity mindset, which is ironic because when you're scarce, you try to go abundant and try to get everybody. When you'll never get everybody. You almost need to come down to wherever you like to work with and go from there. So let me ask you this question as well. Now you do mainly PR now. Yes. Yeah. And you have a number of products, and if you want to know more about Larissa, we're going to get there in the end, but you have things like the Instant Authority Method, right? You do PR as well. Who do you like to work with?
I like to work with, that's a good question, entrepreneurs who they've been in the business for a while. I mean, I'm talking about like my ideal agency client. Mm-hmm. Cause I have like a, you know, retainer where we work month because really to get publicity, you need to have a runway. You know, it's not an overnight thing. Yes. For my retainer clients, it's entrepreneurs who have been in it for a while. They have had success. And now they're like, okay, now I need to start shining my light out into the world so that I can take this to the next level. Because I've been so, you know, focused on doing the work. I haven't been using the medium megaphone mm-hmm. to broadcast what I've been doing.
Why do you like working with entrepreneurs?
I think, because I'm one. Mm-hmm. I understand the mindset. I understand, I mean, my father was an entrepreneur. I think a lot of people don't understand entrepreneurs because we don't fit the mold. You know, we're a little bit of a misfit in a way, in all the best ways possible, because we're independent, we're risk takers. We don't back down from a challenge. You know, like we'll work harder on our own business than we ever would in quote, a safe job.
Yes.
Just because it's ours. So it's that real, interesting mix of personality and drive. Mm-hmm. And you know, they get it. Like they understand this is not going to be something overnight, because that is the worst kind of client for a publicist to work with, is someone who's like, well, how come I'm not on the cover of Forbes? We started yesterday.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this question, because I think there's, and this is not an area I'm strong in. So correct me if I'm using the wrong words here, right? But a lot of business, especially smaller businesses, don't take advantage of the media. And there is this generic thing where you're like, we're going to send a press release. Ooh. And you kind of send this press release out and you're kind of like, yeah, we hit the media. Like that's amazing. But you're saying it's a long kind of, it's more like a marathon, so to speak. And one thing builds on the next, which builds on the next, which builds on the next. Where do people get it wrong?
I think where they get it wrong is because there are some sites that will do pay to play, right? Like, you know, you can pay, like, you know, I can pay Entrepreneur or Forbes like $2,500 to be part of their founders council, and then I can publish stories. Or I can pay, you know, $3,000 and get a quote, an advertorial, which is, you know, basically, and you, because this is a thing, like publicity is really about getting earned media, which is where you are not paying to play. Mm-hmm. You are being published because the journalist or the, you know, producer sees that you have merit and they want to promote you to their audience, right? They want to quote you as an expert. So that's earned media. You're not in control of the actual message. Like you're just going through an intermediary. where it's with ads or advertorial, that is paid. So you have complete control. And I think, you know, there's kind of been this rise of, because of ad budget shrinking, mm-hmm. that magazines, in fact, Entrepreneur, I think was it Entrepreneur that just announced it last week? They're going the same route where you can mm-hmm. pay to play. And because they need to survive.
Yes.
They just don't have the ad. So they've got to find a new reality, right? Yeah. A new kind of, what's the word I'm looking for?
Like a new revenue stream, right? They need
a new revenue stream. Yeah. So that's why people, I mean, I see a lot of entrepreneurs going on in Facebook groups like, oh, you can just go buy your way into, like, you know, Inc. or Fast Company. I'm like, well, no,
they sound
can't.
Like, they sound like that person hiding in the bushes who's waiting to come out and point at you.
The PR trolls. Yes. The PR troll. So there's been a lot of, you know, like people who are kind of, they don't trust that. Plus, you know, unfortunately in the last few years, we've seen a rise of quote fake media. And, you know, it's like the, I just saw the like this morning, someone's like, oh, like, do you trust like BBC and CBC? I'm like, well, yeah, like those are, mm-hmm. those are like one of the most neutral, outlets in the world. But there's just like, there's been such a denigration about the media mm-hmm. that you're getting a lot of people who are like, oh, they just pay, you just throw money at it and you can get whatever you want, which is not true.
Mm. Let me ask you this question. And I do, you know, we're going to get to your three steps and how people can keep in touch with you, but we're going to go a little bit on a tangent and I'm going to cap you at sort of 3 minutes here, but because this has been on the back of my mind. And so, you know, we're recording this July 14th, 2020. There's been so much happening with COVID and with, you know, and with Black Lives Matter. And, you know, you're right with the, you know, social media is kind of this outlet, seems to be this outlet for people to kind of, I don't know if it's an abuse of freedom of expression. I don't know if that's the right term, but use it as their soapbox to talk. And then sort of during this time, the media has been really been attacked, whether it's from Trump, right? Or whether it's from people saying, you know, you there's the terms like sheeple and you don't believe the media because they're bought, right? Because they're controlled by the government. Like all these things, where does the media go from here?
Oh boy, I've been thinking about that. I mean, I had someone the other day like questioning when I Reuters. And I'm like, Reuters is like the milk of the media because they are so neutral, mm-hmm. you know, like seriously, like they like, you know, and I think because we're Canadian, you know, the Canadians have a very strict, journalism laws that we have to adhere to when we write something, which is like why Fox was not allowed a license by the CRTC because it was coined. It was, they can't back up their news quote unquote with any facts. Mm-hmm. Which is the cornerstone of journalism. I think it's going to take something radical because it's just like, I feel like what's been happening over these last couple of years is that we've lost a sense of civility. People do not know how to debate. I remember growing up and, you know, we had debate teams in high school. People don't know how to debate. You know, if you don't see that, if you don't agree with what they say, then they just shut you down, say that you're a sheeple. You know, part of this is the rise of like, you know, YouTube, anyone can put anything out on YouTube. People haven't been taught to think critically, which is, I think a big part of the problem is that, you know, did you research that? Think about this. Is this something that you really think would be true? Who's this benefiting? Like all of those questions, And plus then you've got outside agents feeding into this to sow the seeds of disparity and discord and all these, you know, conspiracy theories. I think it's going to take something pretty radical to kind of turn this Titanic around because it's society. So I think the educational system, it has to start there. You know, like going back to those basics, you know, being civil to each other. How do you properly debate? Mm-hmm. How do you critically think through things and come to, and see the other side of the story. Maybe, maybe there is some merit to what they're saying. Don't just shut them down because, you like orange popsicles and they like cherry, like find that middle ground. And that's, I think, what the big problem is. People are not willing to succeed an inch because then they're, I don't want to be weak. Mm. And this whole idea of backing down or is somehow a weakness when in fact it's being part of society.
But you're right though, right? Like what the interesting thing here is, you're a binomial, you're either for or against, and there's no gray in between, right? The interesting with media sometimes, and I understand there's a bias between the order of the story. So for example, Globe and Mail or CBC will always typically, if there's a story, they'll try to get both sides. It's not just one side. And then on top of that, if they're looking at factual stuff, they always try to get a second or third source to back these things up. And you can correct me if I'm wrong there, right? Whereas, so the amount of effort that media takes per word is significantly higher than someone in the back end just kind of writing conspiracy theory stories or whatever. So, but you're right. I mean, out of all things that you said there is that we should be open to listening to many different things, even if it doesn't congruently agree with you right away. But anyways, I'm getting on my soapbox. So I appreciate your input on that. I'm always curious as to what you think. So we're going to get to Larissa's three steps. And Larissa clearly has been super successful from being a dancer to a car salesperson to, her own PR agency. And Larissa, you had some really good news come in the other day. I'm going to give you a couple seconds to tell us about that. Go ahead.
Oh, yes, I was chosen there was a summit and for people who are doing joint ventures, entrepreneurs, business people. And every time they do the summit, they choose five entrepreneurs to present to quote the shark attack, who are entrepreneurs who have a very large list, who are very successful in doing joint ventures. I mean, one of the sharks I was chosen to be in this last one. And one of the sharks, for example, has a 1.3 million subscriber list. It's crazy. Like, I just can't even think about those numbers. So, so I was chosen to present and all nine sharks said, yes, they want to continue discussions and negotiations with me. So I am pretty, pretty stoked about that.
Yeah. Amazing, right? So congratulations on that.
Thank you.
And we can't wait here until you become a shark yourself. And I think that'll just be a matter of time. So keep on going where you are. It's congratulations on all your success. Those three tips still. So every week when we bring on the podcaster, we bring on successful and interesting people who not only talk about their story, but also leave us three steps for you, the business owner, to improve either yourself or the business. Larissa has three steps ready. Larissa, the floor is yours.
Okay. Number one is get over yourself. All right. You, as I said earlier, get that, put that imposter syndrome to the side. The whole idea about I can't show off, I can't be a braggart. No, you are an expert. You need to own that, because you hiding in a cave and not shining your light is not only doing you a disservice financially, but it's doing your clients a disservice. How can they find you if you're not letting yourself be found? Okay. So number one, you are worthy of media attention. Doesn't mean you have to end up on the front cover of Forbes. Think of media as being like baseball. You start off in the little league, then you bump up to the minors, and then you're ready for the majors. Okay. It builds upon itself. So number two is get really clear on your message. What makes, to be successful, you need to have really good story angles, right? So read those outlets that you want to get featured in. Get familiar with who are those journalists, who are the producers for those radio shows, those television shows, the news programs. Read what they are putting out. and see what kind of angles they take. Like, when it, like, how do they like to form those stories? And then start thinking about how you can fit into that narrative. How can you continue that narrative? So, if someone wrote a story about, I don't know, something in your niche, you could pitch a story that would continue on from there, right? Like, that story went to you know, maybe point B. You pitch a story that will take them from point B to C. You know, like, and the other thing I want you to say, this is also a mental thing. Don't think of yourself as going hat in hand to the media and going, please, sir, a bit more, you know, like from Oliver. The media are just people like you and I doing their job, and their job is hard. You know, imagine that you had to research and write a blog post every single day. It's pretty much what they're up against, right? They're not experts. Like, they're great writers. Like, they're, you know, they know how to research and whatnot, but they're not an expert. That's why they need us, the experts, to come to them as someone who's coming with value. Hey, I have this great story idea. I'm an expert in this. I can give you all the facts. I can give you, like, I've even thought of like three different story possibilities that you could choose from. They're going to love you because guess what? You've just made their life so much easier. Like, you know, like, imagine looking at the blank page and thinking, I got to write something and I got to hand this into my editor. I don't know what to write about.
And you've been doing it for years and years and years, right? So your brain is like mush, right? So, yeah. No, it's a good
point. You think to change that mindset. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we've gotten over the imposter syndrome. We've gotten clear about what is my message? What's my story makes it interesting? And there's something interesting, trust me, because nobody is you. Like, your journey is different. Your beginnings were different. What your philosophies are different. Just package that up and find those interesting little tidbits. And then, yeah, just look at the media as being an equal. You're coming into this as an equal partner in helping give value to their audience.
Well, it's great to say that, right? Because I think at the same time, you know, because the first thing you said was basically be yourself and rock, unleash your rock star, so to speak, right? And then what you just said was treat them as an equal, because I think a lot of times we get all tense when we deal with the media, right? You get all tense and your shoulders go up and you know, it's almost like you get claw-like fingers. That's what I think, because you get really nervous about it. And then when you put out a press release, you're not yourself. You are trying to be, and so you end up putting the super mediocre press release out, I imagine, all the time or whatever it is, right? Yeah, be yourself. So, Larissa, again, the three things really quickly are?
Get over yourself. You're an expert. Let your light shine. Number two, figure out what are your unique story angles. What do you bring to the table that nobody else does? And it'd be interesting. And number three, you approach the media as an equal, right? You're bringing value to them. And if I can just give one more little tip.
Of course.
Relate it to tip number three, go onto Twitter and start following those writers, those journalists that you want to pitch, right? They all hang out on Twitter. Do not approach them on Facebook or Instagram. That's like their private, you know, personal domains. Do not go there, because then it's like kind of stalkerish and creepy. But Twitter is fine because everyone hangs out on Twitter in the media. So find them on Twitter and start following them, start retweeting their articles, interact, so that when it comes time for you to pitch those stories, you're not just some cold name out of the blue. Like, they know that your name is going to be familiar to them. This is about it's like anything in business. It's about building relationships.
Yeah. Super cool. Thank you for sharing those. Those are incredible. Larissa, if people wanted to reach out to you and talk to you more about what you have to offer, or maybe some ideas, we're going to include a link below in the show notes. Is that right? And you wanted to include a freebie for my audience as well.
Yes, I have 365 days to power up your publicity. It's the only promo calendar you will need. It goes through every single one of those crazy days that they celebrate, from how to talk like a pirate day to, eat bagels day or whatever. But the thing is, you can go through this. And again, the media is always looking for something to promote these days with, because it's, you know, it's fun, it's newsworthy. So look for those and see what aligns with your business. Really quick suggestion might be like, say if it was like National Fake Fur Day, which actually does exist. If you were a stylist, you could be like, you know, get approach the newspaper for a photo shoot with different vendors with fake fur. You could take it from the finance, approach the finance angle, that the cost of fake fur versus real fur, and the ticket to the, you know, environmental aspect of it, you know, the psychological aspect of it, you know, like, or the how cultural, how, take the cultural aspect, how it has shifted over the last few years. So there's, don't just take it at face value, start looking at all the different facets that you can explore. So get your initial story and then just reuse it, repurpose, like, and ring it for every bit of goodness that you can.
No, that's amazing. That sounds great. And that's free. So free. Click on the show notes, download and start looking at Eating Bagels Day, because that sounds like amazing. That sounds like an amazing day to have. All right. Look, it's been a pleasure having you on the show, Larissa. I want some, how do I put this? I want to leave you with an opportunity for a final thought, but I'm going to put you in a little bit of a sandbox here.
Okay.
Your bio reads like from success to success to success, which is awesome. And obviously you do a great job of what you do, because we're having this pleasant conversation and we've talked about all the things that have gone well. Tell me about a time when, as a final thought, tell me about a time when things maybe weren't as rosy, but you shifted and you're learning coming from that. And it's kind of a lifelong lesson that you learned.
Yeah. Well, yeah, no, I'm obviously, we always want to showcase the good, but there's definitely a lot of bumps and bruises along the way. And anyone who says otherwise is either incredibly lucky, or lying. So yeah. Oh yeah. Obviously I've had a lot of bumps and bruises along the way. The one thing I have learned was, you know, this whole thing about heart-centered, I think sometimes we take it too far. You know, like the whole idea of, oh, you know, I think maybe especially for women, because we always want to be the nurturer. We don't want to, you know, and we don't want to upset the boat. We want to take care of everybody. And I had a situation where I had one of my employees had gone through a bad health situation, and she'd come out the other side, thank goodness, and had been saying how because of this, her insurance was going to be like now sky high because of the pre-existing condition. And I was discussing with her, like, you know, like the yearly review, and I did something really stupid because I led with my heart, not my business head. And when I say stupid, it was stupid for my business. It wasn't stupid as a friend. It wasn't stupid as someone that, you know, I care about, but it was not a good decision for the business and ultimately for anybody. And instead of saying, oh, I'm going to give you a 12% commission, it came out 20. And also I had bumped up her salary, but I had already bumped up her salary. And then this came out of my mouth and I couldn't take it back. Right. It was out there. And ultimately what happened was, you know, then she didn't want to work as much the next year because it was too much. And it was no longer sustainable. You know, it wasn't sustainable. Like I, as an owner, I wasn't getting paid what I needed to get paid. I couldn't keep the things running the way they were. So that's one of those things where I've learned to lead with the head when it comes to business. Like I'm not saying being a jerk, but your business is your baby, and nobody will ever take care of it or care about it the way that you will. And you have to be, you just have to be not hard-hearted. You just need to really be clear-eyed about what you need to do to give that baby the best upbringing and environment and experiences that it can. Because if you can't help the baby grow, then you're not going to have a baby.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty powerful stuff, right? And I think you came from a good place to try to help that employee, right? But I think the irony of it is that you try to help her on, and she probably ended up losing her job because the pay was too high and she couldn't work enough and the commission was too high, right? Like, so, yeah. and that didn't work for anybody, right? So, but it's a good story to have, and it's a good lesson to learn as well. So thank you for sharing that. All right, team, I think we're going to wrap it there. I always bring on successful and super interesting entrepreneurs, and Lyra, so you certainly qualify for both. So thank you for being on the show today.
Thank you for having me, James.
Look, team, every week we bring on interesting and successful entrepreneurs who share their wisdom as well as provide us three steps to either improve yourself or the business owner. And Larissa Banting has been incredible here. So we thank her very much. One more thing, team, is if you enjoyed this podcast, please consider rating and reviewing this podcast. It's how we can get these business tips to more small business owners. Because let's be honest, as a small business owner, you work harder than anybody else. And a lot of the times the financial rewards aren't there. And that's because the learning isn't there. So the more people we can get this out to, the stronger this podcast, the stronger small businesses around the world. So if you could rate and review, I would really appreciate it. Team, love each and every one of you. Same time, same place next week. And I'll talk to you then. Don't forget, if you love this podcast, please leave a review. One of my goals is to support as many entrepreneurs and small business owners as possible with these simple, actionable, and practical tips. My team and I spend countless hours finding great guests who are experts in their field, and these people 100% volunteer to be on this show. And one of the best ways to help other people find this podcast is with your review. So if you would be so kind and subscribe and leave a review, this show can get out to more people, and I would be forever grateful. So thank you in advance. Okay, guys, thanks so much. Once more.